This podcast was recorded around Christmas time. Things will not have changed by the time you hear it, because we're not going to say anything that could change.
Yep. Just like that Fraser fir or the blue spruce tree you're staring at right now, this is our evergreen show, so we can take some time off around the holidays.
Thank goodness. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU's weekly look at Ohio politics and those shrewd, sometimes unprincipled Snollygosters who work in the political world. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. This week, an abbreviated Snollygoster, not much going on, so Steve and I will fondly recall some of the top political stories of the year, including some of our personal favorites.
We will, very fondly. There was, of course, we should start with the race that the New York Times called the Thriller in Vanilla, the governor's race between Mike DeWine and Richard Cordray.
Yes, it wasn't the most exciting gubernatorial race in the country, but, you know, on the good side, it was policy-oriented. It was Mike DeWine's folksy aw shucks attitude against noted Jeopardy champion, you know how exciting they can be, Jeopardy champion Richard Cordray, nearly drama-free and, you know, frankly, like we said, pretty boring.
I'm actually thankful because it let me catch up on my sleep this fall, which can be rare in election cycles. It was a pretty boring race. Like I said, it was two policy wonks, two very qualified politicians, two very nice guys. We've talked to both of them, I think, multiple times. And they're both very pleasant individuals, both very smart, capable guys, but it did not make for good audio or good copy.
No gaffes, really.
No big scandals.
They did spend a lot of money, though. Tens of millions of dollars, yes.
Most expensive race in Ohio history. It seems like every election becomes the most expensive in Ohio history, so I fully expect the 2022 race to become the most expensive.
Who'd have thunk it after that GOP primary? Remember that, Steve?
I do remember that just a little bit. Yeah, that was a lot more interesting. That was Mike DeWine versus Mary Taylor. Taylor called him a D.C. DeWine, a phony conservative, made fun of his advanced age. DeWine called her a slacker, also called her a phony conservative.
Yeah, he got really nasty. Remember how surprised we were about that?
We were very surprised because, you know, DeWine, he is a tough politician, but he does not get that nasty usually.
And he always had a sizable lead and he won easily. We just couldn't figure out why he was going so hard after Mary Taylor. And it left many to believe that it was personal.
And it must have been. Maybe his lead wasn't as big as we thought it was. I mean, he did end up clocking her on primary day, but I don't know. I mean, maybe that's why. Maybe his ads work.
And in the end, it really didn't matter. Mike DeWine, of course, captured the governorship, and Mary Taylor endorsed him before the election. So
what you're saying is that what you're saying is that after a primary, the politician said we should all come together now.
Yeah, I'm not sure that was.
You don't think they're having Christmas dinner together?
No, I don't think there were hugs and kumbaya, but she did endorse him.
You know, also a big guy in the news this year, John Kasich. His travels around the country, we poked fun at a lot with our segment, John Kasich GPS. It was a lot like travels with Rick Steves, except without the khakis. He drifted further and further left. He vetoed gun bills. In his final days, he made it illegal in Ohio to discriminate against people based on their gender identity. Still waiting to see what he does next, but it was an interesting year for John Kasich, that's for sure.
Yeah, he was on a national show every week. He made at least one trip, if I recall, to New Hampshire, maybe two. I think he made one in the spring and one in the fall. He has not gone to Iowa that I know of at this point.
I don't know that he has either. Definitely New Hampshire.
Yeah, New Hampshire twice. Of course, he came in second in New Hampshire in 2016 to Donald Trump and had a good showing there. We'll see what he does next. You know, I think in the last few weeks, I would say it's looking less likely he runs for president. He said, I'm not going to do something I can't win. And he says, as of right now, I cannot beat Donald Trump in a Republican primary, and it's very hard to win an independent bid. So I think the needle has gone a little bit back towards not running for president.
Now the question is, what will his cable talk show be called? It can't be called From the Heartland anymore because that was his Fox show. I'm just trying to think of Pete, like From the Rocks maybe, because he always talks about he's from McKee's Rocks or whatever it's called. It's gonna be a cheesy name.
One of his favorite sayings that he says all the time is, "At the end of the day, At the end of the day, we have all got to come together.
Yep.
At the end of the day, it comes down to the economy. Maybe that's the name of his show. It'll be a late night political talk show called At the End of the
Day.
That's
a great name for a late night talk show. It's a daily recap show. Script writes itself.
That's right. But I still think he could run if Bob Mueller's report on Donald Trump is really, really bad.
Yeah, it would have to be really bad because we've talked about how dedicated Trump's base is. Speaking of not having a clear path, there is the Parade of Errors, otherwise known as Ohio's Medical Marijuana Program. They hired a convicted drug dealer to help develop that program. That was a great idea. It took seven months to even pick growers. Then nearly immediately, there was a litany of problems. Some people said they were denied growing licenses because of a, quote, racial quota. One winning application was initially denied because of a scoring error. Then they started adding more programs to make up for people who were left out. The program was supposed to be fully up and running 4 months ago, and there's still no pot for sale in Ohio, at least not legally. I know you can probably buy some pot out in Union County, I'm sure, but I don't know where you could buy it. There's no dispensaries open yet.
No, soon. They'll be open soon. You could call it growing pains, Steve. Growing pains.
The future of the pot program is foggy?
Yes. The pot
clouded. It's clouded.
You know, the pot puns have got to go away anyway. But it's going to go on sale. Medical pot will go on sale in the coming weeks, and then the campaign begins to legalize it completely.
It's coming. It's going to be a great story, and it's not far behind.
No, Michigan just recently made it legal, and other states have done the same, and they're making big money, and that's the bottom line. Where there's big money, there will be legalization. Another one of our stories this year, top stories, almost forgotten when you think about it, because it really did not get played up much during the campaign. But if you recall, Steve, the third most powerful man in Ohio state government abruptly resigned because the FBI was investigating him. We're talking about former House Speaker Cliff Rosenberger, who quit his job as Speaker because of questions about trips he went on with folks from the payday lending industry. Oddly enough, as the speaker and others were organizing their pictures from those vacations and trips, the payday lending legislation was stalled at the State House.
Huh.
And then, you know, soon as the investigation came to light and the speaker resigned, coincidentally, lawmakers passed those tougher caps on interest rates charged by short-term lenders.
That is a big coincidence.
Yes. It just happened that way. And that, as far as we know, that investigation continues.
State House Republicans who decided to investigate Bill Seitz. He's a well-known Republican senator who reportedly made some sexist and off-color remarks at a going-away party. GOP leaders obviously really wanted to get to the bottom of what happened, so they hired a law firm to investigate. Again, speaking of big coincidences, it just happened to be a big coincidence that they hired a law firm that Bill Seitz worked for 36 years.
Now, the firm claims they were independent and everything was done above board, and his relationship with the firm had no influence on the investigation.
And they said, and another shocker, they said no wrongdoing occurred. He did not deserve to be disciplined.
So there you go.
Yeah, that's really interesting. We want to get now to our favorite stories of the year. Not important like the stories we just read, but our favorite stories. I'll let Mike go first.
Yeah, there was some candidates here. I mean, some of those ads that Richard Cordray made about with him shooting hoops and helping elderly women with their groceries. And,
yeah.
You know, those were odd. But my favorite character, my favorite story of the year was the ECOT Eagle. This was, you know, sort of like a sports mascot costume. Now, this costume belonged to ECOT, the Electronic Classroom of Tomorrow, the virtual charter school, which had to shut down after the state found they were overcharging the state. So they had to shut down and basically auction off all of their assets as far as their bankruptcy was concerned. And one of the things they auctioned off was a costume of the ECOT Eagle. Democrats or left advocates, progressive advocates, bought the costume, and the Eagle followed Republican politicians all around the state, namely Mike DeWine, asking what happened to ECOT and why Republican politicians did not crack down on ECOT before they did. So the ECOT Eagle is my favorite character.
That's a tough one to top. That's a really nuanced burn on Republicans. I'm going to go with something a little sillier, not even as big of a deal, the Jim Renacci stripper plane. The conservative politician who unsuccessfully challenged Sherrod Brown for his U.S. Senate seat used a plane owned by a guy who owns a bunch of strip clubs. But unlike most snollygosters, most of these shrewd politicians who might wilt under public pressure and apologize and give back any money and repay the strip club owner, Renacci doubled down, he refused to apologize, and he chastised the media for asking him about it. Stay strong, Jim Renacci.
That was a nasty campaign. I was on the panel for one of the debates between Sherrod Brown and Jim Renacci, and those two guys.
They wouldn't shake hands at the debates.
No, and they did not like each other. In fact, the debate was run in WOSU's TV studios here in Columbus. It was sponsored by WCMH, the NBC affiliate here in Columbus. And WCMH, at the last minute, had to hire off-duty Columbus police officers to guard the studio for fear that the campaigns would get into trouble, confront each other, or try to storm the studio. They didn't know what was going to happen, so they actually had to have armed guards outside of the studio. Nothing happened. It was it was a relatively cordial debate, but it just shows you the animosity between those two sides.
I love it. We need more of that in Ohio.
I don't know.
Podcasters do, not the taxpayers, but
yes.
political people like you and I need more of this to cover. Either way, it was a great first year for the podcast. We really enjoy doing it. It's fun to lightheartedly poke hard at politicians. I don't think either you or I have animosity toward these men and women, but it is fun to talk about the lighter side of politics.
We're not cynics, Steve. We're realists.
You're pretty cynical.
I'm not a cynic. I'm a realist.
I'm kind of cynical, too, let's be honest. Anyway, it was a great 2018. Thank you so much to all of our listeners. As always, if you have any suggestions on how to improve the show, you can always email them to us. You can also suggest the Snollygoster of the Week. Include that in your email to snollygoster@wosu.org. And until 2019, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster on WOSU Public Media.